Welcome to the Game Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Okay, we've got a lot to cover today. Not only do I have my interview with the charming and delightful Dal McLean, I want to let people know that my book, A Body in a Bathhouse, is currently available for free. Now, today is March 19th, 2020, for those that may listen to this in the future, and it's available today and tomorrow, Thursday and Friday. And I'm doing this for those that are stuck in their household because I know people are getting bored, and this is the best way I knew that I could give to those that may have nothing to do. After that, Amazon, the lowest rate they'll let me do is 99 cents. I will run it for 99 cents for a while, just as an offer to folks to help them out.
I think that's a great thing, Brad.
Well, thank you. It was a tough decision because I'm not a promoter of giving away free books. I don't really think it's a good idea to give one's gift away, but it just seemed like the right thing to do.
I agree.
And the other thing I was going to cover, I want to thank you to the Lambda Literary Awards. First of all, great job to all the award winners.
The finalists, yes,
I'm sorry. All the finalists in the Lambda Literary Awards for 2020. But a special congratulations to our guests that were on the air, which would be Michael Kraft, Michael Nava, Marshall Thornton, and then an upcoming guest in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not exactly sure. Greg Heron will be on as part of a roundtable discussion group. So good job to all four of you, and good job to all the Lambda Award finalists.
And over the next few weeks, Brad, I'm going to be reviewing some of the other books on that list for people to tune in.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
I want to read them, and so while I'm reading, I will be sharing.
There you go. That was a smart move. Kill two birds with one stone.
Correct. I don't know if I'd want to do kill two birds, though, during a coronavirus outbreak.
Well, if it's in the backyard, you'll be safe.
Okay.
So, this is Justine. Justine, you have a couple of book reviews to do for us today, or a book review and announcement.
Yes. Well, let me tell you about the book. It's called The Quarter Boys, and it's set in the French Quarter, so that's where the title comes from. The Quarter Boys by David Lennon. It is book one in the Michelle Doucette and Sassy Jones mystery. Michelle Doucette is a police detective. He's a gay police detective down in New Orleans. And Sassy Jones is a black female who is his partner. This is a 6-book series. The Quarter Boys is book one. Book two, Echoes, won a Lambda Award in 2010, and David Lennon has been a Lambda finalist 4 times. So this is an excellent set of mysteries for you to enjoy through the quarantine. It's also available on Kindle Unlimited.
Well, you can't get any better than that with a Lambda Winnie and 4 nominations. So sounds like a good recommendation.
Yeah.
What do you have to tell us?
Let me tell you a little about these books. Michelle he's a few months after his mother had died, and his personal demons are a kind of a steady hum in the background. He's recovering from grief, he's drinking a bit much, and he's wondering if he's ever going to have a relationship and working those things out as a steady hum in the background. But the book itself starts off with a rather gruesome killing by a vicious serial killer, and it's told from the point of view of the victim, which is it really slaps you in the face as you start. And from there, it's a constant stream of steady action. This gets a thrilling recommendation. Sassy Jones is a partner worth having, and even though she's senior, she respects Michelle's instincts quite a bit as they work through this mystery. You know, I really don't want to tell you too much about it because it'll be spoilers. If I tell you, oh, the suspect was the one you knew it was all along, or if it's the person you didn't know and it's a surprise, and none of that. All of that is left to spoiler territory. I will tell you, though, that between Michelle and the coroner, Mr. Lesher, there are a lot of small clues that come together to put the pieces of the serial killer and the identity. The Porter boys are all young boys, most of whom are working as hustlers in the French Quarter. And Michelle doesn't really have a relationship, but starting a relationship with one of them.
Well, it sounds like a thriller. You say it's a thriller, but it sounds like there's a bit of mystery as well.
Oh, it's definitely a mystery. It's a thrilling mystery.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
That's what it's got, a thrilling recommendation. It's not really a thriller, but it is one of those fast paced, you know, one step ahead and of the killer and then one step behind the killer.
Sounds like a winner.
Yeah. And one of the main supporting characters is a black jag queen called Lady Chanel. And she is a presence both in the French Quarter and in this book.
So we got a thrilling recommendation for Quarter Boys.
Yes. And I think the Lambda nominations are well deserved for this author. And, you know, I always like to review the first book in the series, too, for those of you who like to read in order.
Yeah. Even if they're standalones, it's more fun to read in order.
That's right.
And you have something from Requeered Tales?
Well, Requeered Tales, all of our mystery series are available on Kindle Unlimited. Our other books, our literary books, are not, but our mysteries are all available on Kindle Unlimited. And you can find out what those are by going to our website, requeeredtales.com. And coming up, we're going to be releasing the fourth book in the Grant Michaels series, Mask for a Diva.
Y'all have been releasing so many books lately, I can't keep up anymore.
Well, we like to have a good amount of inventory, so there's something for everyone. But you can always find them on our website at requeeredtales.com under the current releases. And then there's also a page of our upcoming release.
And as I usually try to remember to do, I will definitely put a link to Requeered Tales on the show notes this week.
Thanks. So,
and people can get the show notes at gamemysterypodcast.com.
Good luck being at home. I guess you and I both work from home, so we're not going to be affected.
Yeah, it works for me, and my husband works in an office all by himself 90% of the time. So we have a pretty good situation. And take care, everybody else out there. Be safe. Stay home.
I hope all of our listeners are stocked up and self-quarantined.
Exactly.
Social distancing. Read a book.
Well, hang on and listen to Dahl McClain. She was a delight to talk to, so I think you'll enjoy the show.
I'm looking forward to it. See you next week, Brad.
Okay, see you then, Justine. If you enjoy Gay Mystery Podcast, let others know by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our show. Today's guest, Dahl McClain, comes from the north of Scotland. Her background is in journalism, and she has an undying passion for history. The more scandalous, the better. Dahl has lived in Asia and worked all over the world, but home is now the UK. Her first book, Bitter Legacy, was a 2017 Lambda Literary Award finalist for mystery and was chosen by the American Library Association for their 2018 Over the Rainbow Recommended Book List. Her newest novel, Blue on Blue, is currently available for pre-order on Amazon and releases March 24th. Welcome, Dahl.
Hello, Brad. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm very honored.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. I got to tell you, being in Scotland, I think you would feel at home here in Los Angeles. Our weather has been 55 degrees, which is about 13 degrees Celsius, and
that's
rainy.
Warm.
It's rainy and it's so wet. It's so wet that it feels much colder than it is.
Well, yes, that does sound exactly like the weather I'm just looking out the window at right now. Scotland rain. It rains all the time, really, in Scotland. Well, 80% of the time, that's what it feels like. We're all a bit rusty. But it's 4 o'clock here now, so I'm starting to, you know, dull over.
Well, you know, we have so many fires here that it's good to get some rain this time of year for us. So let's hopefully it'll help for the summer.
I always think of California as unbelievably warm all the time. So it shakes me to hear that you actually have cold.
It's a myth that Hollywood has created, and they did a great job of doing that.
I'm devastated.
We do get colder in the, I mean, we get very little snow, if ever, but we do get much colder than people think we do. So they did a good job. The Tourism Bureau in Hollywood has fooled the world.
Well, we haven't. We're absolutely honest about the fact that our weather stinks.
But your grass is beautiful.
Yes, that is true. That's a compensation. But to be absolutely honest with you, I could do without the grass if it was just a bit warmer.
Well, I want to start by talking about your Bitter Legacy series, which Blue on Blue will be the third novel in the series. And your first novel, Bitter Legacy, as I said, was a Lambda Award literary finalist in 2017. That was your first novel. So I got to say, great job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was, I must admit, a real shock, you know, that Bitter Legacy did get to that point. I don't think I actually realized how prestigious the award was until I saw everybody else's reaction, but it was an incredible honor.
Oh, it certainly is. And I say great job. People say congratulations, but you didn't win a prize. You worked hard for it. So good on you.
Thank you. That's really kind. You're such a sweetheart. I told you.
I try. I have everyone fooled. Now, unlike most series novels, each of your three stories comes from a point of view of a different character. How did you come up with an idea for such an unconventional trilogy?
I think I'm just really stupid. It would have been so much easier to do just one character. But I think I just wanted different perspectives on the kind of the law enforcement point of view. The first one in Bitter Legacy, we have a kind of an idealistic policeman who has come late to law enforcement, and he very much believes that what he's doing is virtuous and the right thing. And the second book is from the point of view of the hunted, somebody who is being framed, somebody who is on the receiving end of that kind of enthusiastic policeman. And actually, I deliberately brought in one character and spread that I introduced in Bitter Legacy, and also used him in Object of Desire to try and bring across that dichotomy. It was a lawyer, a solicitor, we would call him an attorney, I guess you would call him, who in Bitter Legacy is representing one of the suspects. And from the point of view of the main character, James Henderson, he is a pain in the arse because he is constantly challenging, being difficult, throwing up roadblocks on behalf of his client. Whereas in Object of Desire, the main character, Tom Gray, who is the suspect, the same lawyer is defending him. And from his point of view, he is just incredibly grateful that this guy is a pain in the arse because it is the only thing that's keeping him out of a police cell. So that was, a deliberate decision to try to have the point of view of the hunter and the hunted. And in Blue on Blue, again, it's a cop, but this is a very world-weary cop. Who has been through a lot, and he is in the position of having to try to investigate his own colleagues. So, again, very different from the Bitter Legacy point of view. I just wanted three different perspectives. I always write in a very tight third. Unreliable narrator is, you know, my thing. And I, as a result, I really try and get inside the mindset of each individual character. And it just seemed a more interesting way of looking at it than just having, you know, exactly the same point of view over and over again.
Well, I think it's interesting that you were able to do three different point of views, yet there's a cohesion that all ties together the three stories. So it's very interesting that you took that route. Now, I do want to point out, you know that Justine did a review of your series, and yes, she gave it high ratings, including a Double Flaming Review, which was the first, which is kind of fun.
Yes, I know. I don't know what that is, but it sounds really, really good.
Flaming means hot and sexy, that there's plenty of that there as well.
Okay. Thank you, Justine.
I got to say, what she said was, you gave us an advanced copy of Blue on Blue.
Yeah.
And I want to let the listeners know that even though you won the Lambda for the first novel, she personally believed that Blue on Blue was better than the other two novels. So if somebody hasn't read your books or has read the books, they have a treat coming up for them.
Oh, that is really good. That's really good to hear. I really enjoyed writing Blue on Blue, not just because, you know, as we were discussing earlier, it gets a little bit easier as it goes along. I just really like the perspective of this particular point of view character, Will Foster. And it's kind of a mixture between police procedural and, I suppose you could say, a thriller. And I had fun doing it. And I hope that comes across.
Well, give us your story. As much as you can, describe Blue on Blue for us.
Well, without giving too much away, Will Foster is introduced actually in the second book, Object of Desire. And he is actually, this is the MM aspect, I'm afraid, but he is the love interest of the main character, Tom Gray. But he was a policeman. And in Object of Desire, he is a private investigator because he's left the Metropolitan Police because of an event that occurred. His sergeant was killed in a raid, which wasn't actually his fault, but he feels a sort of responsibility for it because of certain events, which I can't go into. He is back in the Met in the third book, and he attends the scene of a murder. And he basically, it's almost like dominoes falling. He ends up in a situation where he finds himself with no way out. He finds himself investigating his colleagues who are incredibly close to him, and able to trust almost nobody. There are really just two or three people he can trust. And he's kind of like a rat in a trap. There's no way out to do it, to avoid doing this. He doesn't want to do it, but he has to do it. And really, it's just his journey through that, whether or not, you know, how he gets to the end of that in one piece.
Character cohesion is a difficult thing to do, especially in a series. How difficult is it to keep your cast within characters?
I actually find it reasonably easy, probably because I go into character so deeply, to an anal degree. I go into character, like every single character, however small, everything that they do, I have to justify to myself that they have a reason for doing it. Preferably if their main character, a reason that comes from within their character or their background or something, they have to have a reason, because as a reader, I absolutely hate reading a book where the character behaves in a certain way to fit the plot rather than, you know, doing something because it's something they would do. So I find, because of that each character does sort of seem quite real to me. I do try and develop them, though. Like, for example, James Henderson, who is the hero of the first book, he's a real, you could say, a white knight. He's a typical heroic character. But I hope that by the end of Blue on Blue, he has a bit more nuance to him, because he's learned a bit through the things that have happened to him. I just like, and also Tom Gray, I think, has developed. He's the hero of the second book. I think he's developed by the end of book three, and Will Foster definitely has. So I like the idea of them learning and changing through what's happening to them, but I want to keep the cohesion of who they actually are at heart, if I can.
Well, it's really fun to get lost into a character and really feel like you've fleshed them out and they seem real.
Yeah, really. I mean, your Mitch in your book is totally real. And he, you know, he has hinterland and so on because, you know, he has a background that develops through the book. And I think that's a brilliant thing. You know, when something like that happens, you begin, you don't quite understand the character. By the end of the book, you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the plug. I did not pay her for that plug.
He did actually. I really, character is my passion. I do think that if you get a book, you know, obviously the plot is important, but if you don't have a three-dimensional character, then, you know, the plot is kind of wasted. You need the two things to really make a book successful, I think.
Well, let's talk about your baddies, because when it comes to character, your antagonists, you keep them interesting as well. How would you compare your bad guys to other baddies that are out there? What makes them different?
I don't know. I think certainly in Bitter Legacy, my baddie got me into a lot of trouble because it turned out my baddie was more sympathetic than my love interest. Because apparently, sleeping around is worse than serial murder in some cases. So I think what I want to do is try and make some of my baddies at least as, again, three-dimensional and believable and even sympathetic, because I mean, I don't mind, and I write as well, a good 3D, you know, scenery chewing villain as well, because they're fantastic fun, you know, ones who are just evil or just, you know, have some sort of condition that, you know, whether it's sociopathy or psychopathy, whatever, just that makes them as they are. But there are other characters that become baddies because of events. I mean, I think the vengeance motive for a baddie is always a fascinating one, because that can sometimes actually be almost understandable. And I just think there are so many ways to make the bad guy interesting that isn't just, you know, he's evil. Because not many bad guys probably actually believe they're evil, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. they probably believe they have motivations that are, you know, perfectly reasonable. And I think if you can get that across as well, that just adds another dimension to the book.
And you mentioned sleeping around. You have the unique ability, and more power to you, that you attract a mystery audience, but you also attract a male audience, let's be honest. And you mentioned sleeping around. That is a big no-no when it comes to male-male. So I think you're more male-male. You're less male-male than you think you are.
I think you're probably right, because people say to me, you know, how did you become a romance author? And I actually don't think I am. I think I've tried to be a romance author. But I think that in a lot of ways, the romance rules that you're supposed to follow as a romance author, I do sort of sidle around a lot of them. There is one that I always stick with, because I think there's a good reason for it, and that's the happy ending, which I think a lot of people believe is a very, you know, juvenile or infantile thing to, you know, have in a book, and it's predictable and so on. But as I think I've mentioned to you before, when I read books with LGBT gay characters, almost inevitably the ending is, for these characters, is tragic, or if not tragic, miserable or solitary or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was one particular book that just drove me over the edge. It was a fabulous book. It was called When Meat Loves Salt. It was a historical novel, and it was wonderful, and it was tragic and miserable and the kind of ending that, you know, sticks with you forever. And I just sort of thought, I just don't want to do this anymore. And then I read Fatal Shadows by Josh Lanyon, which was the first gay mystery I'd ever read that actually had that sort of positive ending. Maybe I was just unlucky with the stuff I'd been reading before. But I just thought, there's a positivity to it, and why not? And since I've been writing, I've had correspondence with a few of my readers, male readers, who've said that the reason that they like genre MM, like especially mystery MM, is because at last, you know, they are sure of the happy ending for characters like themselves. And I think that is one positive thing about MM, you know, whatever else people may feel about it. I do think that's a positive thing, that there is, you know, positivity in it for readers who, you know, maybe are tired of the tragic gay trope. I know certainly that as a reader I was.
Well, I think there's room for both in this world. I personally like not knowing if there's going to be a happy ending or not. But
yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you romance guarantees it. You know what you're getting. Otherwise, you don't. But I think in a lot of ways, I mean, this is possibly wrong, and I was just unfortunate with the stuff I was reading or watching on TV or watching in movies, but almost everything I was seeing and reading was a negative ending. And I think that's almost where Slash came from in fanfic, which is where I began. people were just tired of either not seeing LGBT characters and representation or seeing that miserable ending. So they took it into their own hands and began to write these characters, and not always happy endings, but you know, that feeling that there was some need of representation and some need of, you know, a positivity in their prospects and then the ending.
Well, and every era thinks they live in troubled times, but we are living in some really troubled times right now. So even though I don't necessarily want to be guaranteed a happy ending, I certainly understand why some people really cling to that. I get it.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. And I got to tell you, though, you don't win a Lambda Literary finalist for mystery for a male-male novel. So let me just tell you that. There's nothing wrong with some romance and some good hot sex and a mystery. They're both good, but you obviously have strong mystery to do that. And as I said, Justine thinks your third book is the strongest, which I'll remind people is available on pre-order right now on Amazon.
Yes, it is. It's out at the end of this month. I learned a lot, actually, I think I have to say, from the editor that I've been working with. I was very, very lucky that I ended up with Blind Eye Books, which is an LGBT press run by a Lambda winner, Nicole Kimberling, and her wife. And they are absolutely stupendous, excellent. She's an excellent editor as well as a writer. And she taught me a lot about mystery structure, mystery tropes, and so on. And I absolutely feel that without that, I probably wouldn't have been anywhere near a Lambda.
Well, you bring something interesting in, because in a genre where there's so many that self-publish, either because they choose to or a lot can't find a publishing house interested in their subject, and I say this is especially true of those that are transgender, you chose the traditional route. What was your thought process regarding why you chose that process?
Because I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn more about writing. I began, as I said, I've always written, always, but usually, just factual writing. And when I started doing fanfic, it was almost as, it was just an experiment, a hobby. It's a totally different thing. It's using a different part of your brain. You're actually using your courage in a lot of ways, as you know yourself. You're exposing parts of your psyche. And fanfic it's almost like, it's performing. It's almost like stripping. Fanfic is like you're down to your underwear, right? But you're using other people's characters, other people's universes. You're playing with those. With original fiction, it's the full Monty. It's your characters, your fiction, and so on. And it's actually you're exposing all of that to an audience and asking to be judged. I didn't do a literature degree. I haven't done any writing workshops or anything like that. So when I came in from fanfic, I was very much, anything goes in fanfic. It's like the Wild West. I didn't know anything about rules. Whereas Nicole, I was very lucky that she saw something in my first draft. She was launching One Block Empire, which is a mystery imprint for Blind Eye Books. And she took on my manuscript with the offer of a developmental edit, which is actually almost impossible to come by in publishing now. It's basically just going through the manuscript from the very beginning and taking it apart and putting it together again. And it was just, you have to leave your ego at the door, and that can be very difficult, but it was a fantastic process and I learned a huge amount. And as you point out, that's vanishingly rare now in publishing, I think.
Yeah, I don't belong to one anymore, but I used to belong to a writer's group every week where we critiqued our writing and also have an editor. And you do have to check your ego at the door, because sometimes what you think was perfect is not so perfect. And I found sometimes the things I didn't think come across well, they're like, that's probably your best chapter. So
yeah, exactly. And it's so hard to judge your own writing.
Yes, it is.
The things that you love, your babies, you don't want to see them slaughtered in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
But quite often that's what needs to be done. And to be able to have the pleasure and the honor of having a good editor is just it's worth so much.
Yeah, there was a my most recent novel that I'm writing currently, it went to my editor and some beta readers, and there was a section I just loved that I wrote. And everybody was like, it's well written, but no, it really drags the story. And it broke my heart to take that out. So, because I just had such a fun time writing the scene, but it didn't carry the story well enough. So I had to go, but I'll use it someday.
Yeah, I know. I've got a whole file of scenes that I've had to drop, but you know,
it breaks your heart.
It really, really does. But in the end, when you actually look at the finished product, you realize after a while, yes, that was the right decision. It has tightened it up.
Well, you are a fan of this show, so you know what time it is. It's time for Awkward Question Authors Get.
Oh, goody.
Goody. And so, you know, I'm going to spin the wheel, and whatever comes up, I'm going to ask you the question.
Okay.
So don't get too nervous. You sound very nervous.
Yes, I'm totally bricking it, as they say. Over here.
Well, just sit back in here. I'm going to spin the wheel.
Is it still spinning?
It just finished. So, and you have one that's not all that difficult. This is almost a softball.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. This is more of a stereotype question.
She said suspiciously. Okay, go.
I know all writers have cats. How many do you have?
Oh, that's isn't. I've got one. I had two, but unfortunately she died in the summer. But I have one, and he is actually the model of a cat in book two.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He is a quarter Bengal, and the rest is all Mog. He's very magnificent.
So he shows up in the book. What's his name?
His name in reality is Tabs. That's very, very sad. But in the book, he's called John. John the cat.
You know what? I had a cat named Kitty, so I understand.
That is even worse. It makes me feel so much better. It's like having a dog called Fido, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's go back to your characters.
Okay.
If you could have drinks with one of your characters, with whom would it be?
Somebody asked me this, and I said Steggy in Bitter Legacy, but a lot of people got very angry with me because you'd have to read Bitter Legacy and find out what happens to Steggy. So I'll change my mind and say Pez. Pez in Object of Desire, because he's a fantastic gossip. He's very funny. He's completely fearless. And he's just my, you know, type of guy. There are other people too that I would love to have drinks with. My other choice would be DS Alex Scrivener from Bitter Legacy, who's a Glaswegian cop and extremely sarcastic. So I like bitchy, sarcastic people.
Well, I find it interesting that you're picking secondary characters.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, I love secondary characters. I put a lot into secondary characters because I just adore them. Don't you? I think they kind of make the book.
Yes, I definitely think so. It's very easy to make them cardboard characters. And it's when you don't do that, which you shouldn't as a writer, you can just fall in love with them, sometimes more than your protagonist.
Yeah, totally. I there are a few of them that I just absolutely, I do adore. I could quite easily just write about them.
What would you and Pez talk about?
Pez would probably want to talk about fashion, about which I know very little. I mean, I learned a lot for Object of Desire, but in reality, it doesn't really interest me all that much. So he'd probably want to talk about the Kardashians or something. Actually, we probably wouldn't get on all that well. But I think he would want to talk about Tom and Will in Object of Desire. He would want to gossip about them and bitch about them and moan about them, I would think. What would I talk about? Probably the same thing.
Well, Tom is a model.
Tom is a model, yes.
So it does sound like something, the way you describe Pez, it does sound like something that he would want to talk about.
Yeah, well, Tom is kind of a, although he's very successful, he's kind of a crap model because his heart isn't in it at all. And he is actually more of an intellectual. He's very into, he was doing a chemistry degree when he was discovered. And in Blue on Blue, he is studying forensic science while also still doing a bit of modeling on the side. So his heart isn't particularly in it either. He tries his best to care about, you know, what is new season and what isn't, but it's not actually his interest. But the actual world itself is absolutely fascinating. It's brutal. And for the psychology of the male model is fascinating. It's one of the reasons I chose modeling as the subject and object of desire. It is actually very interesting if you dig down into it.
Yeah, I think many people think that being a model is glamorous and they're all rich and nothing could be further from the truth. Only the few rocket to the stardom.
Yeah, and even male models that make it to the top earn a fraction of what the women earn. It's you know, really, that's the one occupation that really is true of, that female models earn a lot more than male models. And a lot of male models are really living hand to mouth and in debt, just trying to make a decent living. It's really interesting. And there's also the psychology of the male model, as I mentioned. There's a certain, it's almost fighting against male psychology in a lot of ways, what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be very passive and be an object of desire. I read a lot of accounts from male models when I was researching it, and it's interesting. It's also really quite sad to see how some struggle. But as I said, you know, I would recommend doing some reading into it, because it's not at all what you think it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, Hollywood has done a good job of making that look glamorous. And,
oh, it has, yeah, along with California weather.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, before we wind down, I want to remind everyone that your newest novel is Blue on Blue, and it comes out March 24th, and the ebook is currently available on Amazon for pre-order. And I want to ask you, what would your characters tell us about you?
She worries too much about the details around us, probably. Like, I can spend hours researching the decor in a pub or something like that. That is actually unimportant to everybody else. But yeah, I'm far too anal about absolutely everything in a book. That's probably what they tell you.
Well, I think research that happens with a lot of writers. I'll start digging into LA history and that sort of thing, and I get lost in a rabbit hole, and I'll have notes after notes after notes of stuff I find fascinating, and maybe one paragraph ends up in the book.
You see, we were clearly twins separated at birth. That is exactly the same with me. Yeah, and I have so much research. Like, I could talk for hours about male models, absolutely pointless. But yeah, I know I just research all the time because I love doing it. And, you know, sometimes you can get some of that into the book, but a lot of the time it's just, you know, you're wasting time. You should be more productive.
Yeah. Yep. It's hard to do the balance.
Yeah.
Now, what do your friends and family think of your writing?
I think they're quite proud of it, actually. They like it. They like mystery. They're all sort of fans of mystery, as am I. So I think they like that aspect of it the most. And as we've discussed before, I'm not, you know, a traditional romantic writer either. So I think that I produce this kind of weird hybrid where it's sort of harder core romance, but there's more romance than in the usual genre mystery. So I think I've converted them to that, or maybe it's just because they have to say that.
Well, I'm going to throw a tough one at you. This one almost should have been the awkward question authors get, but I just, to get you to know better, I've got to ask you this question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you and why?
Oh, how weird am I? I think I'm really boring, actually. I think I'm probably about a 3. I'm not weird at all. I'm just a really boring person, I think. So, yeah, how disappointing is that? I'd like to say that, I don't know, I have an elephant in the garden or something, but I just don't. I could say that. You wouldn't know any different.
No, we want to know the real you.
No, exactly. Well, no, unfortunately, I don't have an elephant in the garden. No, I don't think I'm weird at all, sadly. I wish I was.
I want to tell you that based on the sound check we did the other day and the interview today, that you may not be weird, but I find you absolutely delightful.
Oh, you're so lovely. You really are. I told you, you are a sweetheart.
I've got
you don't even have to pay me money to see that.
You're forgetting I live in Hollywood. I've got everybody fooled. It's all an image. It's all an image. I have a heart of coal.
No, you don't. You really don't.
Yeah, I think the real me comes through. Well, I got to say again, it's been a delight talking to you. This has been a wonderful interview.
It's been a great pleasure, Bud. It really has been. You're just a lovely interviewer.
Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for asking me again.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.